This is The End User, episode 151 for Thursday, October 24th. A bucket-free interface. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Futurist Prime, Taylor Marr. Now, Chris, we've jumped this week right into the future. It's a Wednesday instead of our normal Monday recording. And that's because a lot of product announcements happened in the first half of this week.
Yeah, I think at the top of the show there I said a bit of news from your perspective. And that is not, in fact, what is happening. There is a truckload of news to talk about this week.
Right. So the main thing, to me anyway, the reason we postponed the show was because Apple had an event that they announced since our last show where they said they had a lot to cover. And boy, did they. Okay. So broad strokes really quickly.
Take a breath, announced Taylor.
A new full-size iPad that is about 33% smaller than the fourth generation iPad. So they're going to go ahead and call it the iPad Air. They announced a new iPad mini that also has the full Retina display of the full-size iPad. And they announced new Retina display MacBook Pros. So those are all the products that they announced that they're available today. They also announced that the final version of OS 10.9 Mavericks is available today, and it's free, which is brand new. And I've already downloaded and played with it.
Apple had some free options back in the day, but they started charging $30 as when OS X started, right?
Well, I don't know. They were charging a lot more than that when OS X started releasing their iterations. And it's been going down ever since Snow Leopard.
That's right. And I think, what was Snow Leopard? Like $10 for an upgrade at least?
Snow Leopard was $30. Lion was $20. Mountain Lion was $10.
Okay, I'm thinking of Mountain Lion.
Yeah, and Mavericks is free.
Cool. So you expect that to stick around?
No. I mean, this is probably the last iteration of OS X. So whatever they come out with in the next thing that they're doing, who knows?
Yeah, that's true. I do wonder if that would stick around with a move to OS 11 or whatever they end up calling it. But if they do release any further iterations of OS 10, I'd probably expect them to be free at this point.
Yes, if they release more iterations of OS 10, I think they absolutely will be free. I mean, they will just be updates at this point. GarageBand for iOS is also free and starting today, and they're going to have in-app purchases of special tracks that you can get, and they showed off a bunch of new fun ones. They have a bunch of different drummers who can play along with you automatically. But more importantly, the Mac Pro, the new glossy black built-in America Mac Pro, has been announced to go on sale in December, and It will cost $3,000 to start, and they didn't say what day in December. And we've been hearing about this computer for a long time, and we still have to wait, but we'll get it by the end of the year, and we know exactly what's in it and how much it costs.
Right, so we just have more detail on the infamous black trash can.
Yes, the most powerful black trash can in the world.
Yeah, that's right. It is pretty awesome. I really like where they're going with that thing.
Right. So the new iPad, the iPad Air, let's start with that.
Yeah, so right off the top here, what's up with the branding? It's very interesting to me that they went with the Air branding. I guess it's thinner, but it strikes me as odd that they would go with that.
Well, they didn't explain why they went with it, and so I can't really tell you. But I would suspect that there's probably another kind of iPad coming.
So you think they're going to have at some point in the future, they're going to have iPad Air and some other 10-inch iPad and the iPad Mini?
I think they may come out with something like a 12 or 13-inch iPad or maybe
a bigger one.
Something that is just bigger and more powerful, kind of like the Surface tablets are the same size but have different levels of power.
Yeah, they. It's funny, during the event, they poked fun at the Surface. They said, you know, our competitors are trying to make tablets that are computers and computers that are tablets and so on. And I'm not sure I've heard them reference a competitor like that in a keynote for a while.
Yeah, they picked on competitors a lot more in this keynote, but it's something they usually do, and they usually like to use numbers and metrics to compare themselves to their competitors. But they really wanted to differentiate that we're doing tablets and just tablets, and we're making the best tablets, and we're doing laptops and just laptops, and we're making the best laptops.
Yeah, the message is Apple is focused.
Right. So this iPad Air, with its unfocused name or cryptic name that we just don't understand yet, is much slimmer. So they've narrowed the sides of it. They've shrunk the bezel. They've made it thinner. So now it is only 7.5 millimeters thick.
Nice. And the screen remains the same. It's 9.7 with the same resolution of 2048 by 1536. So
that is correct.
That screen was ahead of its time in the first place. So that's, I kind of expect that.
Right. And they think that that's, you know, a high enough resolution for a screen of this size. They're still calling it Retina display. And they are putting the same A7 chip as the iPhone 5S in here. And it's got the same battery life, despite being smaller and thinner. And they say that is pretty much entirely due to their ability to get more power out of a more efficient processor.
Sure.
Now the new iPad Mini is basically just a smaller iPad Air, and that differentiates it from the first generation iPad Mini, which came out at the same time as the iPad 4, but had the same capabilities as the iPad 2. So they have the A7 chip and the full Retina display, which is an even higher resolution, or an even higher density, but the same resolution as the new iPad, and all of the same capabilities in a smaller package. Now, the iPad Air is the same price for the same capacity. So it starts at $500 for a 16-gigabyte model. Now, the Retina display iPad Mini starts at $400. So let me go through the whole lineup here. I'll skip some things. They're still selling the first-generation iPad Mini, which comes with the A5 processor and a non-Retina display, for $300. And starting at $400, you can get either the iPad 2, which does not have the Retina display, or the iPad Mini with Retina display. And if you add $100, you get bumped up to a higher capacity. And if you add $130, you get cellular capabilities. And then the iPad Air has the same pricing structure, but starting at that same $500 price point that they've been since they started.
Yeah, and I just love the way these look. What do you think of the new design on the hardware here?
Well, since I have the previous generation iPad, I'm pretty jealous. The difference between the iPad 3 and the iPad 4 was a faster processor and a Lightning port instead of an iPod port. And this new one is 30% smaller in every way. I mean, they went from 1.4 pounds to 1 pound flat, which is amazing and very impressive.
And it's available in these two colors, the silver and space gray. So I'm liking the new thinner bezels, but the same size screen, and the silver finish on the back just looks great. It kind of fits in with their MacBook Air lines. I really like the design aesthetic they've gone for here. It's a little bit different.
Yeah, no gold iPads, nothing gold.
No.
this time around.
Yeah, see, and I don't think... I think people would go crazy for a gold iPad, though, wouldn't they? They should release, like, 20 gold iPads into the world.
So they also announced a bunch of cases. I think that's where they expect people to customize their iPads. So they have a newly designed smart cover. The smart covers now are all made with polyurethane and plastic and microfiber. The cases are all made of leather now.
So that's a nice little touch. They're $80 each.
The cases are $80 for the full-size iPad, 70 for the iPad Mini. Okay. And again, those are leather cases, so those are premium, and I think it's just $30 for the polyurethane cover, which are all available in product red.
So I've got a few thousand dollars burning a hole in my pocket. When can I actually get one of these things?
So the iPad Air comes out November 1st with all its accessories, and the iPad Mini will be available later in November. They didn't give a date.
Yeah, so we just don't know for that one. But yeah, come November 1st, these things look pretty good. I think for what ultimately is an iterative upgrade, I think this is a pretty darn good one. There is actually some tangible value in this upgrade in a way that the previous iPad's upgrade just didn't have. So
yeah, for either device.
Right, right. So that's definitely kind of nice to see.
It is.
All right, well, should we move on to the next? We're at the top of the show here. We're going to be all Apple all the time. So we're going to run down the Apple event. So let's get into the new MacBook Pros. So we've got the Haswell architecture. What else we got going on here?
So they updated the Retina display MacBook Pros to have the new Haswell architecture, and then they lowered the price. So you can get a 13-inch MacBook Pro with a Retina display for as little as $1,300. Now, they've dropped the specs a little bit on these to achieve that price. So the $1,300 MacBook Pro only comes with 4 gigabytes of RAM, as opposed to the 8, which was standard. But they are now also all upgradable to 16 gigabytes of RAM, whereas you used to only be able to get 8 max, which is good because with these logic boards, you can't upgrade the RAM at all. It's soldered in.
Right, so you can't cheap out at first and then look to upgrade it later. But yeah, these these machines have always been very nice, and I think it's kind of nice to drop the price a little bit. And 4 gig is enough, right? For most
especially
people?
Especially with OS X Mavericks, memory expanding and compressing architecture.
Right, so they said that solely through the use of software, they were able to increase your battery life, and they've added a bunch of optimizations, right? And one of them you mentioned there was they're compressing what they're storing in the memory so that the memory can be more efficient somehow. So I'm not quite sure how all that works together, but suffice it to say they've optimized Mavericks in a way that will allow your battery to last longer, and you've experienced that the fans are kicking in less during the podcast.
Yeah, that's right. I've actually got the fans on their lowest setting now, which I've never been able to do since we started this podcast.
Yeah, that's cool. So it's good to see them kind of trim the fat. Well, I guess it's not even trimming the fat. It's they're actively pursuing some kind of power optimization.
Yeah, that's right. And it's all supposedly in the name of better battery life, but it works as well for limited amounts of memory and for heat management, which is my main problem with an older MacBook Pro. Also, can I just mention how amazing it is? My MacBook Pro is 6.5 years old and is running the operating system that came out yesterday.
Yeah, let's see.
And it's better than ever.
Yeah, you could. That's pretty good, I guess. I bet if you had a 6-year-old computer, if it was of a quality that is a MacBook Pro, that it would be able to run the latest software, whether it be the latest Ubuntu Saucy Salamander, which was released recently, or the latest Windows 8. So I don't know. I think that's just the world we live in now.
It could be, but that said, there are not a whole lot of people who are running computers this old, much less podcasting from them.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely agree with that one.
Okay, so externally, there are not many changes made to the new Retina MacBook Pro, but they did manage to shrink the 13-inch model down to the 0.7 inches of the 15-inch model. That's they only shaved 3 or 4 hundredths of an inch off of it, but they also managed to get nearly 0.5 pounds off of the weight.
So Yeah, and that's pretty good. But so what's up with the old MacBook Pros? What's going on with the ones with the low-res screen at this point?
Well, there's only one left. It was not upgraded yesterday. They had been selling the a 13-inch model and two 15-inch models running the last-generation Intel processors. And these are the ones that still had optical drives. So they're only selling the 13-inch model now. It's still last year's Intel processors, and it is under $1,000 with an education discount, or $1,200 without. And I think this is just for people who walk into an Apple store and really want a computer with an optical drive. This is the only one they have left, and it's also the only non-Retina mobile device that they have left, except for the legacy models that they're selling.
Yeah, and I got to imagine that the computers with optical drives are just going to go away eventually, and this is one step in that direction.
Apple has eliminated all of the optical drives from all of their desktops as well, so this is yep. The only integrated optical drive computer that they're still selling.
And, you know, if you still do actually need an optical drive, what you can do is just get an external one, and that's okay. You really don't need an optical drive in your computer just kind of wandering around the world day to day.
You don't, and that's definitely Apple's mind. And their external optical drive is fairly reasonably priced, and it works with all of their computers.
Or if you do, and I would love to hear a counter argument to this, but if you do need an optical drive for your day-to-day driving, then I think something is going wrong.
Yeah, that may be the case. Apple also gives you the option to use a different computer's optical drive as if it was your own over Wi-Fi.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't see that as part of the announcement.
Well, that's because it's been a feature ever since the MacBook Air.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Did I mention that the new Retina MacBook Pros have Thunderbolt 2?
Oh, right. So what do we get with Thunderbolt 2? What is the advantage to this?
Well, it's faster. It allows you to daisy chain more devices together. And so you can connect up to 6 devices from one port and get up to 20 gigabits per second from each device into the computer. And now each Retina MacBook Pro has 2 Thunderbolt ports.
So I'd like to see how many 4K monitors you could daisy chain back to back.
It depends on your graphics card, basically. So with the new Mac Pro, which hasn't come out yet, they will have the capacity to do 4 4K monitors or 6 full resolution Thunderbolt monitors. So that would be 2560 by 1440 times 6.
Wow, that is some serious power.
And you can run them full speed and full resolution off of one Thunderbolt port.
Some serious power. The new Mac Pro is really impressing me. I'm liking what I see. So it's the downside is that it is $3,000 to start. It's going to come out sometime in December. And it's got this new form factor. We've talked about the trash can before. And I really like this kind of fresh take on what a little desktop computer should be. This is not your average tower of old, right?
Right, not at all. It is 1/6 the size of Apple's old Mac Pro tower, and it's much, much quieter. They said that their engineering goal was to make the most powerful computer that they could while making the same amount of noise as their Mac Mini, their current generation Mac Mini, which is a fantastically quiet computer. It operates at 12 decibels under load.
Yeah, it beats my self-built home theater PC, I'll tell you that much.
So let me tell you just briefly what you get for $3,000, and I will skip the $4,000 model because I'm sure anybody who cares will have already looked it up on Apple's website.
Yeah, you can spec this thing up to more than $10,000, so you could really go
easily.
Insane. It's made for video editing pros and audio pros and, you know, people that kind of have the money to burn on having fast processing be part of their business. So, you know, when you get up that high, that that's really for really high-end, high-load kind of work situations. So it's a little different than just, you know, somebody who's going to plop this next to their desk.
Right. So that $3,000 entry-level model gets you a quad-core Intel Xeon E5 running at 3.7 gigahertz. You get 12 gigabytes of memory standard running at 1,866 megahertz. And you get two AMD FirePro D300 graphics processors, each with 2 gigabytes of DDR5 VRAM and two teraflops performance coming out of each one. And just that base model will allow you to connect, as I mentioned before, three 4K displays or six Thunderbolt displays running at full resolution. The standard storage level is 256 gigabytes of PCI Express flash storage, which I think we've mentioned before, is 10 times faster than even the fastest hard drive out there. And then it has your basic USB 3 ports, six Thunderbolt 2 ports, two gigabit Ethernet ports, and one HDMI that's running the latest standard that allows you to plug it into a 4K display. It's got 802.11 AC, Bluetooth 4.0, and everything else after that is pretty much standard. Ooh, aside man. From the look of it, of course, which is a glossy black cylinder that's 10 inches tall and 6.5 inches wide and weighs 11 pounds.
And it will do your dishes.
I wish it would do my dishes. I really need somebody to do my dishes.
I'm sure you could, if you could put this thing inside of a robot of some sort, it could do your dishes somehow. There's a
I would probably just kill me and assume my identity. So I'm not convinced that it would do my dishes for me.
Yeah, that's probably true. It has enough power to become sentient, so you have to be a little careful with that.
All right, so we won't see that Mac Pro until sometime in December, but they have promised that it will be available for the holiday season, so we can assume that that'll be on the early side of December. Although I bet you, even at $3,000, these things are going to be hard to find until mid-January.
Yeah, probably, because I bet you they're not going to make a lot of them at any one time.
Right. But what you can get now for free, which is a lot less than $3,000, is the new version of OS X Mavericks, which we've mentioned and gone over the features before. You can upgrade from the App Store directly from anything as far back as OS 10.6 Snow Leopard, as long as you have the App Store in there. So Snow Leopard, Lion, or Mountain Lion, you could upgrade directly to Mavericks for free and get pretty much all of the features that have come with all of them. But the new features in this one are native iBooks, native Apple Maps with flyover technology, which is really cool. One thing I really like about Maps is that you can send directions straight to your iPhone and then have it do turn-by-turn in there. The calendar has been upgraded. It's much nicer. They have support for multiple displays, notifications on a lot more apps. You have tabs in Finder and tags that you can tag files. And the new iCloud keychain, which is basically like LastPass or 1Password, but it's integrated across iCloud among all of your Apple devices, which is great. I've been a big proponent of 1Password for Apple password management. But I'm testing around with iCloud Keychain, and it's great. There are a few incremental upgrades to Safari as well, but mostly this really just feels like a slight refinement of Mountain Lion with a couple of new apps and features. Yeah, it doesn't really feel to me like a brand new operating system.
It's basically a bunch of fit and finish and polish and cleaning up the edges, right?
But I think the real value, and my computer more than just about any other really illustrates this value, is that it makes your computer run faster and cooler and better and longer.
Yeah, so this will breathe some new life into your relatively old laptop.
Or it'll breathe a lot of new life into your newer model laptop, because there are a lot of technologies that my old laptop can't take advantage of.
Yeah, so that's definitely good to see. There's on the Windows side, there's some, I don't know how Windows handles its battery life, but it it really sucks down the power. So it's good to see Apple kind of focus on that. So I know running both Windows and Linux on my laptop, it's the same hardware basically, and it doesn't get the same end result.
As Mavericks?
Well, as Mavericks.
Okay. Yeah.
As any OS X, they do something. They do something with their power management that Windows and Linux just hasn't caught up to yet. I mean, those MacBook Airs, they're x86 computers, and they just have an incredible battery life. And there's you can put the same hardware with another operating system on it, and you will not get that same battery life.
Well, when those MacBook Airs talked about them in June, they announced that the rated battery life was going to be, I think, 10 and 12 hours, or maybe 9 and 12 hours. So the 13-inch model was rated for 12 hours in June, but that was before Mavericks came out. Now, some initial tests have been done, and they're saying that same 13-inch MacBook Air running Mavericks gets closer to 15.
Yeah, that's nice. That's a long time.
That's a very long time. That's, the longest flight in the world.
Yeah, you leave your charger at home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe not if you're going on an international flight. That might be unwise, but...
Maybe not. But if you knew you had one waiting for you, you could...
Yeah, if you're just going out, to work or something, you just leave the charger at home. You're not going to need it. So that's extremely encouraging. So we have you mentioned there were a couple new apps on here. What did they show off during the keynote?
Well, the apps that I mentioned that are built into Mavericks are just iBooks, Maps, and the new calendar and Safari. But they also announced new versions of iLife and iWork. They are updated, and they are just like iLife and iWork for iOS devices. These are going to be free with the purchase of any new Mac.
So do you think this signals Apple's intention to somehow move to a free software and not free hardware kind of model like they do with the iPhone, but with their Mac computers? Do you think that is reasonable, or do you think they're going to take it back when OS 11 comes out?
I don't know what they're going to do, but I think that they will probably continue to charge for iLife and iWork upgrades for a while. They're just trying to get more people into that system. And another way that they are doing that is iLife and iWork files are now available online for free. They had been beta testing their iWork cloud suite at beta.icloud.com. You could get access to Numbers, Pages, and Keynote. And they've removed the beta label and made it so that if I shared an iWork file with you, Chris, even if you don't have an iCloud account, you can go on to iCloud.com, see the file that I shared it with you, and edit it if you want to, using the limited feature set that they have available online.
Yeah, that's cool. That's one thing that Apple has not typically been good at in the past, is offering online services. And I feel like they're trying to round the corner on that. And it's definitely, integrating with Apple services on other devices has been problematic in the past. So I guess that's a little token of their commitment to providing some services.
Right.
Although I got to say, I'm still not going to be terribly hopeful that they're going to be, as a provider of services, that they're going to be the best. I think Google pretty much has that locked up, don't they?
Well, I use Google services a lot. You use them whenever possible, and we use Google Drive to produce this show. But I've been beta testing the iWork online suite, and it's been great. In some ways, even in terms of collaboration, it has Google Drive beat hands down.
Yeah, Matt, did you ever get to use the Office web apps?
No, I didn't get to use those.
So that's the clear analog on the other side is the Office web apps, and they're pretty good. Now, I haven't used – I wasn't in the beta program, so maybe we can give this a try perhaps.
Maybe.
So all I have to do is sign up online for an Apple account, and then we could share documents after that?
Well, again, if I shared something with you, you don't even need an account.
Okay.
All right, one more piece of Apple news before we move on. And I just wanted to mention that iOS 7.0.3 is a new update that also came out yesterday, right after the announcement. It comes with some bug fixes, including some of those lock screen bugs that we were talking about before, as well as support for iCloud Keychain, which was announced or which was released with Mavericks.
Cool. So a little update here and there. That's good to see.
Yeah, definitely. It's a very quick update for iOS, and it's definitely worth it. I haven't found any bugs so far.
Cool. Good to hear. All right. So do you have any final thoughts on all the Apple stuff that has been revealed after this event? A lot of the changes were kind of iterative, but I think they were all positive. I can't see anything. I don't see any negatives here. You know, they're keeping up with the times. They're adding Haswell to their MacBook Pros. They bumped the MacBook Airs a little bit. We got a new iPad. Not a whole lot to complain about.
Yeah, I would have loved to see an earlier release date on the Mac Pro. We've been hearing about this for so long.
Yeah,
and
it's true.
I am still sort of waiting for a MacBook Pro with a touchscreen on it. I feel like
all
of the other premium laptops that are out there are getting touchscreens, and that's something that Apple needs to jump on. But I don't think they're going to do it until they come out with OS 11 or whatever they decide to call it.
Yeah, so I do wonder, you know, when Apple makes fun of something in a keynote, it means that within the next couple years, they will in fact be doing that in a new and inventive way. Isn't that the the modus operandi?
It could be. Apple's made fun of a lot of things, especially during the era of Steve Jobs. But we're in a new era now, and Apple's going to do what they want to do.
Yeah, so some good stuff across the board. I'm liking what I see with the new iPad Air. I think the design language is a little more cohesive across the product line, so good to see.
All right, well, with that, I'm going to hand it over to you so that you can talk about Nokia's big product release. Now, they had a big event this week as well, didn't they?
Yeah, they had an event, and it was not quite at the same time as the Apple event, but it was on the same day, and I'm sure that was just a coincidence, though. But Nokia is part of a more global market in a way. You know, their market is not necessarily the U.S. first, like Apple certainly is. But so they had this the event. It's called Nokia World. It was in Abu Dhabi. And they released a lot of details about some of their upcoming devices. So first off the block, we've got the Nokia Lumia 1520. So that's a gigantic 6-inch screen and a new 1080p display, which is a first for Windows Phone. And that is enabled by the GDR3 update, which I think we've talked about before in the show. And in fact, that screen is so large at 1080p and 6 inches, it's rumored that they're going to add an extra column of live tiles for you.
That is a really big smartphone screen.
Yeah, we're starting to get into ridiculous territory, I think. So once you get into this kind of size, you really start to get some usability issues, I think. And I know some people love it, and I know that there is a market for people who like big phones. I know they're out there, but I just don't think that they are the meat of the market. They're not the middle of... They're not your average smartphone user. Your average smartphone user, I don't think, wants a gigantic 6-inch display. And I think you can make an argument for a giant display if you do actually watch a lot of video. Maybe you travel a lot and you want to prop this thing up on a table and watch some video or something like that. I get it. There are use cases for it. But all of the flagship phones, other than the iPhone, have gotten just out of control large. And I think they're introducing some usability issues with them. Just hitting the home button on a screen this large is kind of difficult.
I wouldn't know. My phones have all been, I guess, the smallest on the market for the past few years.
And I do think, like I said, I think there is a market for it. I'm not saying that nobody would ever get this phone, but I think it's starting to get a little bit ridiculous. And I think 6-inch phones are starting to be on the border. If you're getting any bigger than that, then I think you're going to start to run into some day-to-day limitations of it.
Well, I did get to play with the Galaxy Note 3 recently, which I think is over 6 inches. And I had sort of a hard time with it, but its owner was a big, big fan.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people that have really large devices like the Note and are just in love with it. So I don't get it, but there's definitely a market out there for it. So anyway, it's going to be $750 unlocked, the Lumia 1520 is. And they've knocked back the camera a little bit. You remember the Lumia 1020 had that 41 megapixel camera. They're putting in a 20 megapixel camera, so you'll still be able to get some semblance of the kind of zoom after the fact so that you can edit these photos.
But now, don't they have a new feature on this camera in that you can download the raw data file?
Yeah, so you can download these. We're starting to get into the limits of my camera knowledge. But yeah, I don't think any other phone can do that.
There's no other phone that can do it out of the box.
Right. There's got to be some Android app for it, right?
Well, I'm sure. And if you root your Android phone or jailbreak your iPhone, you can probably find a camera app that can get the raw image data. But this is the preferred format of professional photographers, and this is the first phone that will allow you to download that format right out of the box.
Yep. So it's also got the Qi wireless charging, which I'm a big fan of. My HTC 8X has it, so that's good to see. And for us podcasters, it's got stereo audio microphones, which is kind of cool. And you've also got a micro SD card slot, which is good to see.
Yeah, has Nokia done those in many of their other phones? I feel like they haven't, not since the Windows revolution.
So originally the Windows Phone 7 devices, you just could not expand their storage with micro SD, or at least you couldn't expand their storage in a supported way with micro SD. And, you know, I think most of them haven't had it. I know I have no notion of expanding my 8X, but yeah, it's good. I really like the ability to expand it with micro SD. That's definitely a positive thing to see. And it's kind of a standard in Android land. And it's good to see that that is indeed on this phone. So I'm not sure if other Windows Phone 8 devices had expandable micro SD or not.
There are probably a few, but not too many.
Yeah, I don't think it was very common in that generation of device. So,
all right. Well, speaking of other Windows Phone 8 devices.
Well, so they've also got the Nokia Lumia 1320, and this is more of a mid-range device. It's 6 inches, again, and it's going to come only to European and Asian markets. So it's kind of like the little brother of the one mentioned previously. So
now this is interesting to me, actually, because there aren't too many other companies out there making gigantic mid-range to low-end phones.
Yeah. Most of the gigantic phones are the flagship ones.
Right.
And then for whatever reason, you decrease the screen size and you get into the mid-range ones.
But yeah, here they've decided to decrease the screen density. This is only a 720p display, but it's still a 6-inch screen.
Right. And it's only $339, and that's kind of cool. And they've got a much smaller 5-megapixel camera. And like you said, the resolution on the screen is down to 720p. But still, I mean, all in all, looking at the current smartphone market, it's actually not that bad a device. I'm still kind of flabbergasted by where smartphones have gotten with their 1080p screens and some quad-core processors out there. I mean, they've really matured in a way that is just still kind of wild to me.
Yeah, but screen size for the money, I would say the Nokia 1320 is where it's at right now. Are these still OLED displays?
Okay, so the 1520 is AMOLED. So that's going to be a screen that doesn't perform too well in sunlight, but looks really beautiful in normal indoor conditions.
Yeah, but again, they do have the one of the best non-reflective coatings in the industry for those AMOLED displays.
Right, and apparently their viewing angles are going to be quite good. So, you know, again, I haven't held it in my hand and looked at it, but you're supposed to have a very, very extremely wide viewing angle.
All right, so Nokia also came out with a Windows RT tablet.
Yeah, so this is encouraging to see. It's basically a Surface 2 competitor at this point. It's a 10.1-inch tablet. They're sticking with the Lumia branding, and they're calling it the 2520. It's coming out at the iPad-like price of $499 or $500. And it's got, of course, Windows RT 8.1. And it's also got a similar keyboard attachment. So it's a little bit different from the Surface in that the keyboard attachment is kind of wraps around the tablet and cradles it instead of, you know, flipping out a kickstand.
It's more of a case, but it ends up with the exact same angle and functionality.
Yeah, exactly right. So this is a 1080p screen, which is good to see. And it's got the typical Nokia styling. You know, it's got this bright red colors, and they've got black and blue and white, and they've got this kind of stark, bright minimalism thing going for them that is also reflected in this tablet and in their current line of phones.
I think this is great. I would probably take this over a Surface 2.
Yeah, it's looking like it. I mean, they're also introducing some apps that you can't get on the Surface 2. They've got some exclusive apps. So it comes with the Here Maps. And actually, you know, I'm not sure if those are in the Windows Store, if those are exclusives, or if they're timed exclusives like they are for Windows Phone. For Windows Phone, they released Here Maps eventually down the road. And I don't know if that is the case for Here Maps. Anyway, on the 2520, it comes pre-installed, which is definitely a value add. And they've got a little Carl Zeiss lens on it with a 6.7 megapixel camera, too. So just from looking at this topically, it looks pretty compelling.
Yeah, and that's a rear-facing camera. So that would be something that you take pictures with, not something that you video conference with.
Yeah, the front-facing camera that you would Skype with is 2 megapixels.
Okay, sure. Pretty standard.
And they do indeed have a 4G LTE option. Oh, sorry, I can't say 4G. I forgot.
You'll have to edit that out, Chris.
It's banned. I'll have to go edit that one out. So they do have LTE, and that's definitely a good feature to see.
And it comes in that $500 model?
No, you have to
I see. There's a higher-end model.
Yes,
yeah.
There is a higher-end model to get the LTE. And, you know, I know I've said this before, but for a tablet, unless you've got some specific need to have a data connection, I would just kind of stick to Wi-Fi.
Generally, yeah. But you can always pay for it and then not pay for the data subscription, and it'll just be an option for later.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And so the Power Keyboard, which is the name of the little keyboard attachment that we were talking about, is $150. Which, that seems to be around what these kinds of keyboards cost, even for the iPad, isn't it?
iPad keyboards are generally a little bit less, but they don't have quite the same functionality. iPads are generally just meant to work with regular Bluetooth keyboards, and they've made custom iPad-fitted keyboards, but they're generally still just Bluetooth keyboards that work well with the iPad.
Right, right. Well, so anyway, looking at this versus the Surface 2, I'm not sure there is much going on for the Surface 2.
Well, it should be said that Microsoft has had not a great track record with tablets, but a better track record than Nokia up to this point.
Yeah, I suppose it is. Hopefully it doesn't have the newcomer syndrome, right? Where it's the first generation of something and it takes a little while to perfect.
There's going to be somebody, you know, some sort of Nokia 800 tablet fanatic who's going to be pecking out an email to me as we speak.
Yeah, probably. So we are going to see this device sometime this fall. We don't really know more than that.
They got to get going on that.
Yeah. I wanted it in December.
You may yet get it in December.
All right. Well, should we move off of the Windows Phone news?
And move if you want to, but I think that there's a lot more Windows Phone news to cover. For example, there's a new native Facebook app for Windows 8.1.
This happened very recently. There were some third-party Facebook apps for Windows 8 that were around before, but there was no official Facebook app for Windows 8, and that includes all the touch devices like the Surface and the desktops versions of Windows 8. And Facebook released an official app. It's in the store now. You can go get it. And it kind of follows all of their other apps. They've got this common branding thing. And it, by all means, it looks like a very competent app. I'm kind of impressed with it. It is pretty much a model on how to do a Windows 8 app and keep your brand alive.
Well, that's good then.
Yeah, it's from what I've seen, and I've used it a little bit on my desktop here, it's pretty feature-rich, and I'm liking it a lot.
This is probably the way that Facebook for tablets and touchscreen desktops will be going in the very near future.
Yeah, definitely so.
And coming soon to Windows Phone is Instagram. I have to imagine that these two announcements are related, right? Facebook and Instagram are stepping up their Windows development.
Yeah, well, yes, of course, they must be because, you know, Facebook bought Instagram. And there's been, again, this has been the tagline of both Windows 8 and Windows Phone. There was previously a third-party alternative for an Instagram client that was called SixTag. But, you know, there's really nothing like a first-party app. And, you know, I don't really use Instagram very much, but that's one of those kind of...
Well, yeah, because there's no first-party app. Are you going to download the first-party Instagram app?
I will probably download it and then never use it again. But who knows? Who knows? I can't.
Well, how
say
are you
going to
follow Rihanna and all of her selfies?
I definitely don't want to do that.
All right. Well, what about Rihanna's Vines? Are you going to download the Vine app for Windows Phone?
I'll probably have the same experience with Vine. Would be my guess. I know you've been kind of a big fan of Vine. Has that stuck?
I am not a big fan, but I do find it pretty fun, and it's. It's very low difficulty. I mean, videos are 6 seconds maximum, and that's as long as it takes to make the video.
Yeah, so we've gotten a glimpse at the event of Vine running on Windows Phone. And again, both Vine and Instagram are these kind of platform apps. And to succeed as a smartphone platform, you really need to have these. As much as I don't really care about either of these apps, it's just to get consumers over to your platform, these are the kind of apps you need to have. So
yeah, first-party apps on all platforms. That is what you need.
Yep. So it's good to see this happen, although I'm kind of disappointed that we don't have a firm date or anything, but we've got this kind of vague mention in a keynote in Abu Dhabi. So I'm waiting for these things to come down the pike, but it's good to see that they are at least in the pipeline, as it were.
Yeah, I would just wish you were more excited about using Vine and Instagram.
Yeah, well, maybe I will be. We'll see what happens when those first-party apps come out.
We will see what happens. We will Instagram what happens.
The revolution will be Instagrammed. Is that right?
No, it will not, Chris. That's ridiculous.
All right, well, let's continue with the Windows 8 news. Windows 8.1 is officially available now, and we've all been able to hopefully go through the upgrade process. And for me, it was pretty painless. I upgraded my laptop and my desktop. I attempted to upgrade the Surface, but it got canceled somehow in the middle of the night. So there were some reports of the Windows 8.1 update bricking some surfaces out there. So they pulled the update for a little bit. I believe it is back in the marketplace and you can go get it. But we have talked about Windows 8.1 a lot in the past, and it's what it brings to the table. And it brings a lot of fit and finish to the Windows 8 experience. And I think, you know, it really is what it should have been in the first place. And I happen to not mind the little blemishes on Windows 8. But for people who were doubting it before, I think this is a lot more polished than Windows 8, certainly. And now it's out in the wild, and now you can get it. If you were holding off for this kind of polish to happen, then you no longer have to. But so one thing I found odd is I'm staring here at my multi-monitor setup at home for the podcast, and I was really hoping that they would extend the start screen across both of my monitors, and that never ended up being a reality. So I can tile apps across the second screen, but they don't extend the start screen across to the second screen.
That's kind of strange. I wonder why they would do that.
Yeah, I'm not terribly sure. You've got to imagine that eventually they will do that. But because
how many pages do you have on your start screen?
Enough to go across.
I wonder if they just haven't figured out a way to make things open on the right screen automatically. Like, what if you have something in your start screen, it shows up on the second screen, but you wanted it in your first screen?
Yeah, I'm not terribly sure, but I know you can put the app over there, so I don't see any reason why you couldn't extend the Metro experience to both monitors, because it's still, you can adjust the background now, and you can take a little bit of the edge off of switching between the desktop mode and the start screen. But I think it would be kind of cool to have no notion of the desktop environment existing and only living in the start screen environment on both monitors. I think as some of the Windows 8 apps mature a little bit, that could start to be an actual viable option. And, you know, right now, if you do anything kind of intense, then you need to drop into the desktop. And I've got to imagine that that'll be true for some time to come. But as these apps mature, I've got to imagine that more and more of the usage will be in this kind of start screen, full screen app kind of environment. So I know a lot of people would disagree with that, but I think that is an inevitability.
Sure. A lot of people might disagree with that. A lot of people, it might just go right over their heads.
Yeah, that's probably true. And, you know, if you want to use the desktop, it's still there, so that's okay. And, you know, for applications like this podcast and for software development and video editing, you're going to have to go to the desktop. There's no doubt about that. But I really like the I really like the idea of just living in Metro all day, and I kind of wish that I could do that. And so, I don't know. We'll have to wait for the apps to mature. You know, some of the apps aren't even there now, so it's going to be a long transition, but I'm hoping it'll happen. So, last thing I'll say about Windows 8.1 is that their new search is vastly improved. So, Taylor, you remember if you were at the start screen and you want to launch an app or find a song or something like that, you would begin typing. Let's say I'm looking for Skype. I would type Skype into the little bar there. And what would happen is you would have these buckets where you have applications and settings, and you'd have these different buckets, and then you would have to click into the bucket. And like if it was a settings panel, you would have to click into settings, and then it would show you the thing you need to click to actually launch the settings panel.
Oh, and it wouldn't show you the thing that you were searching for?
Right. So you would search, and it would say there are 3 hits in applications, and there's 4 in settings, for example.
Oh, yeah. That's no good at all. There really should be no buckets in any computer interface.
So
I can't think of any good reason for it.
Now there are no buckets.
Yeah, a bucket-free interface. I like it.
It is officially a bucket-free interface at this point. Some might say it will soon kick the bucket, but there are no buckets for the search bar. So I'm really glad to see that. I thought that was a minorly major hindrance, if that makes any sense, because ultimately it's a small thing.
It doesn't make any sense. You're going to have to...
Ultimately, it was a small thing, but... Man, I used it a lot, and it was really annoying. So it's a minor thing that is major, is kind of my thought there. So anyway, we've talked a lot about what comes with Windows 8.1, so I'm glad to see it finally ship, I had a relatively painless install experience, and it's good to see it come down the pipeline.
Yeah, that's great. It's good to see these updates come out, and if Windows 8 is finally ready, then that's great for them.
Yeah, and
for you,
it'll only mature over time. So we got to get the major first party apps like we were talking about with Windows Phone, and if they can do that, then I think they're in a pretty good position. And if they can't, I think they're not. So we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, while we wait and see, should we turn on our afterburners?
Yeah, please do. That's enough top news for now. The show is extremely top-heavy, so let's get moving with the afterburners.
All right. Hey, Chris, remember earlier in the show when you said, don't bother buying a tablet with cellular? And I said, maybe don't be too hasty? Well, that's because T-Mobile just announced a new deal. Any T-Mobile customer with a tablet that gets LTE can get 200 megabytes of LTE data free every month.
Free? How is this possible?
I think you already have to be a T-Mobile voice customer. I mean, 200 megabytes is not all that much, and I think they're trying to upsell you on either buying a subsidized tablet or paying for more data or both.
And BlackBerry Messenger fans rejoice. They have released a BBM app in the Google Play and iOS app stores, and that's definitely refreshing because I know that some people begrudgingly left BlackBerry and had a hard time leaving BBM behind. So if it's not too late and you were a BBM fan, then you might want to check out their apps.
So who's rejoicing here? Is it the people who are still using the BlackBerry or the people who left BlackBerry and were sad that they can't talk to their BlackBerry friends anymore?
A little bit of both, because the people who came from BlackBerry phones to new iPhone and Android phones can now tap back into that network if they so chose. And people who are still on BBM on BlackBerries get a whole new audience of people that they can send messages to. So I think it's
right.
A win for both.
Sure. All right. Well, the Messenger app wars must be heating up because Google has announced an upgrade to their Hangouts app for iOS and for Android, where they can now make free calls to the U.S. and Canada over Wi-Fi or cellular.
Cool. So let's turn off the afterburners and we'll get into the end user stories. Actually, because of the nature of the show being so top-heavy tonight, we're really the only end-user story we've got is our Green Tech Story of the Week. So what do you got for us this week?
Okay, I have a new LED light bulb. This one is not as cheap as the Cree. That's the one we've mentioned before. It's the cheapest LED bulb that has the quality standards that you're looking for and the amount of light that you would want off of an incandescent or a compact fluorescent bulb. This one is a little bit more expensive than that, but it definitely looks really cool. It functions really well. It has an over-temperature protection avoidance, so it'll shut off if it gets too hot, which the Cree won't. In certain conditions, heat can build up to the point where it might damage the circuit boards connected to the LEDs. So this one is called the Nano Leaf, and it's about $35 on Amazon. And it puts out the equivalent light to a 100-watt incandescent. So that's a pretty bright bulb. And so this one, if you're looking for a premium LED light bulb to last you 30,000 hours, this one is a great way to go. I saw it. It looks really cool. You wouldn't feel weird about showing this off in a bare socket, but you could use it as a regular bulb as well.
Yeah, neat. So this light bulb works for 30,000 hours, so it's a triple expert at creating light, if you believe Malcolm Gladwell. That is one expert light bulb.
I don't think light bulbs need to practice.
Oh, is that they don't get better with time?
No, I don't think so.
In fact, quite the opposite, I guess, right?
Well, 30,000 hours is still a long time.
Yeah, that for sure. All right, well, you were telling us, what was that, maybe 2 weeks ago, that the release of the iOS 7 and on the 5S had some bug with the level apps and that kind of thing. So the accelerometer
and the compass as well.
Yeah, and the compass. So what's going on here with the 5S?
Well, the accelerometer is okay, but so there is an internal compass and a separate motion sensor that can determine level. I guess that is part of the accelerometer, but it's all built into the M7 coprocessor that they put into the iPhone 5S and only the iPhone 5S. Well, now it's in the new iPads as well. I guess nobody's had a chance to test those yet, but the iPhone 5S is showing that the compass is off and the level is off, and this is something that's definitely starting to affect motion-controlled games as well as your compass and your level if you're trying to measure a level something.
In related news, our tip of the week is how to recalibrate the motion sensors in a 5S to get some of that goodness back. So if you follow along in the show notes, we've got a Macworld article that we're passing along, and that will give you the instructions on how to best calibrate those devices until Apple releases a firmware update that will fix it 100%.
Right. Now, this will do a pretty good job of making your iPhone read level, but it cannot perfectly calibrate the compass, and we're not sure if a software fix for that is available.
Yeah, we were speculating about that a couple weeks ago, and we just don't quite know yet. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with that.
Yep, but if you do have an iPhone 5S, you should definitely go read this article, and it'll tell you how to calibrate it as best as possible until a fix can be found.
All right, and we'll move into our last story of the week, and that is an app pick. And it's that Microsoft is releasing some apps for both Android and iOS, more specifically remote desktop apps. So this is more for sysadmins and people who manage servers and stuff like that. There are already a bunch of remote desktop apps out there for Android and iOS, I would assume, and Windows Phone. But Microsoft is releasing a first-party remote desktop app, so you can remote into a server or your desktop or whatever other Windows computer you've got running. So this is kind of a shift. Microsoft launching first-party solutions for platforms that aren't their own is definitely a good thing for all around.
Yeah, I think this is really great that they're doing this. I have never tried a third-party remote desktop app for Windows, but I have tried a few free ones between iOS and Mac, and it seems like nobody had figured out exactly the right way to do it, and I trust Microsoft enough to, even if this first release doesn't quite get the remote desktop, and I'm not saying it has or it hasn't, I haven't tried it because they don't have a Windows computer to try it with, but I trust them to be able to get it right now that they're releasing this software. And I think the feature list is great. Everything looks like it works really well. And, you know, this is not the remote desktops of ages past.
No, in fact, you know, you think of remote desktop, and of course you think, well, okay, so I get a desktop, right? And you can actually get the start screen. So you could have a real touch experience as opposed to getting a desktop on a tiny screen. So, you know, I'm not sure how well the Windows 8 experience will scale down to a phone, but I could imagine using this with only the start screen or something. And, I don't know what you're doing remoting in, but it's kind of cool.
Yeah, it looks great. So they're already available for Android and iOS, and they say that one is coming soon for Windows Phone 8.
Yeah, they confirmed that they're working on it, but we don't have a date. So for whatever reason, they've left out Windows Phone and released the apps for Android and iOS. And ultimately, this is kind of a new thing for them. I don't want to belabor this too much, but putting out services for other platforms is kind of new for them. So I'm really glad to see that happen.
Me too. I think it's great.
All right, and we have run over too long already, so I think it's just time to get out of here.
Right, we usually have a kicker at this point in the show. The kicker this week is the iPad Air. Go buy one.
And so if somebody wanted to contact you from their iPad Air, how would they accomplish this task?
Oh, they definitely should Instagram or Vine me, Chris. It's the same name as my Twitter handle, which is @TaylorPhone.
If you wanted to contact me, you can take your iPad and install the remote desktop app, log into your remote Windows computer, and pull up the Twitter Modern Style app, and you can tweet at me @ChrisHaleBarnes. That is the best method to reach me.
Are you sure there's not an easier way?
Yeah, the iPad has an official Twitter app, so I'm pretty sure you could just use that. But what's the fun in that?
Pretty fun using an iPad.
So I think we'll get out of here this week. So thank you, everyone, for listening to the show. And, of course, you can find more information, including the show notes, over there at thedigitalmediazone.com under The End User. That's THENDUSR. The DMZ has a few other podcasts. You can have a listen to Entertainment 2.0, Scene in HD, The Movie Podcast, and Home On. You can also send us some feedback at our email. That's theenduser@thedigitalmediazone.com. We have a Twitter account. It's @theenduser, so feel free to contact us there as well. Join us in the chat room as we record the show live every Monday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Futurist Prime, Taylor Mott.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.